Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence! Lawrence! Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars! Lars!
No! Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! 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 We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! 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 All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Good morning and welcome to Money Life. It's Money Life for June the 23rd. Thanks so much for joining me. If you are listening to us on time, you're not like listening to us in podcast land a week or two late. Well, today is a big day, and I'm not just talking about the fact that we got a great show planned for you, because that could be any day. But functionally, today is a big day because today is the vote on the Brexit. Some people say it's the Brexit. Some say it's the Remain, right? You exit or you remain. And this is going to be a big deal. I mean, that said, I don't think it's happening. If I had to wager on it, well, okay, I would take the bet that it's not going to happen. And in Great Britain, you can wager on just about anything. Now, look. The vote is today. In fact, it's already been going on by the time you hear this. And it'll, because of the time differences, etc., depending on when you're listening to this, it could already be done. But we won't know the results today. Nope, that'll be Friday morning. So we won't really be able to talk about the Brexit on our show until next week, if at all. We've talked about it a little bit. It is a big day. There are some things you can do. Yes, you're going to have a lot of fears up. I think that you'll get fears up, and I don't think it'll pass. I could be wrong. And if I am, so be it. Does it mean that I'm going to change how I invest? No, it does not. Now, look, I'm also prohibited in making short-term moves. So, you know, the idea that you go, hey, you should do this now, and you could, I can't make a quick profit. I got to hold everything for 6 months. But I think most people making those kinds of moves would be foolish. I think there's a lot of potential changes, good and bad. You can find plenty of stories that'll tell you what you should invest in or not invest in. Truthfully, I think this is going to pass. And by pass, I mean the event is going to happen and nothing's going to change. I could be wrong, but we'll know on Friday. Meanwhile, we've got a great show to get to today that is not going to be focused on Brexit talk. So let me tell you what it is going to be focused on. It's Thursday morning. That means we start, of course, with Tom Lydon in for the ETF of the week. Tom, the editor at ETF Trends. After that, our big interview today is with John Stroyer. He is the chief executive officer at Calvert Investments, and they've been involved in a big research effort that is looking at social investing. Not surprisingly, it came up and it talked about some things on social investing that say, you know, social investing good. Okay, fine. I grant that. You understand the conflict of interest when the guys who do social investing say, look at how good social investing is. And at the same time, if the results they're talking about are true or even close to true, I do think it has a potential to impact the way some people look at social investing. That would include me too. Yeah. So we'll talk about that with John when he's on. But he's the head of Calvert Investments. It's going to be an interesting chat with him today. After that, Bob Powell in for Senior Focus, talking about an issue that is important if you are looking at longevity, and particularly if you are a woman or you know somebody who is, who's going to be looking at whether or not their savings can last their lifetime. And then our Money Life Market Call is with Brian Yackman. He is founder and president of the YCG Funds. He is related to the legendary Don Yachman. He's Don's son. His brother is Stephen Yachman. They're with the Yachman Funds. They've been on the show before, but Brian hung out his own shingle. That's the YCG Funds, and he returns to the Market Call today. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for Market Watch, host of this show every weekday. Whether you've got the Brexit or nothing in particular happening, yeah, we're always going to be here for you every weekday, chatting money, markets, lifestyle, and much, much more. Money Life is independent personal finance. We look at everything because there is no one right way. What we want is not to give you a right way. We want to help you find the right way for you. To that end, we'd love to have you be more involved in the show. And by more involved, I mean, send us your questions, your comments, your suggestions, and much, much more. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you like about the show, what you dislike about the show, and more. Remember, I'm trying to figure out what we're going to do with our No Pants Fridays, for example.
I'm not wearing any pants. Film at 11.
Yeah, because No Pants Fridays could be, you know, tomorrow. But we're also talking about doing a whole bunch of new stuff with our opens and everything else. And if you want to suggest that, you know, hey, tone them down, turn them up, whatever it is, okay, let me know. I'd like to hear from you because your opinion matters to me. And then, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Money Life Show, at MKTW Jaffe for me if you want to learn about my columns and more. All right, so let's get busy because we've got a full lineup and lots to get to. Again, it is the June 23rd edition of Money Life. Tom Lydon to John Stroyer to Bob Powell and then Brian Yachman. We'll start things off with the ETF of the week as Money Life picks up speed right after this message.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Well, I don't favor talking to vermin, but I'll talk to you just this once.
Exchange-traded funds are the investment world's new frontier.
Better listen.
But with so many choices and styles, the ETF world is a bit like the wild, wild west, filled with new issues and ideas, but fraught with the same old dangers of investing.
If you're looking for trouble, I'll accommodate you.
Every Thursday, Tom Lydon of ETF Trends comes to Money Life to tell us about one ETF that is wearing the white hat right now.
Take it easy. We're the good guys.
He'll point out the good, the bad, and the ugly as he tells you which investment is worth taking a shot on.
That's good shooting.
And names his ETF of the week.
Now, Wild West.
Tom Lydon joins us right now for the ETF of the week. Tom, of course, is the editor at ETF Trends, ETFTrends.com, a site that doesn't just give you Tom's picks or focus on what he likes or what he sees. It covers the entire ETF business and gives you insight into what's happening, what's new, what's different, what's changing, and more. If you want more information beyond just go into the website. Well, they're on Twitter at ETF Trends. Tom is on Twitter. He's at Tom Lydon. But right now he's here. Tom Lydon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. It's great to be back.
Our ETF of the week is
the iShares iBox and High Yield X Oil and Gas Corporate Bond ETF. Ticker symbol HYXE.
HYXE. The X is perhaps the important thing here. It's the iBox High Yield Excluding Oil and Gas Corporate Bond ETF, HYXE. So we like corporates. We don't like oil and gas. Why junk bonds without oil exposure?
Great question. And again, right now, this is a brand new ETF. Just came out this week. So the section where you and I talk about where does this fit in the portfolio, we're not going to have ton to talk about right now, Chuck, but it's just another story in the ETF space how ETF issuers are getting more and more creative. There's been a lot of money that's gone into high-yield debt in the last 6 years. A ton has gone into high-yield-based ETFs. However, with the decline in the oil and gas markets, especially what's been going on here domestically, there's been a concern about defaults among companies that are pulling oil and gas out of the ground. The yields are great, but yield doesn't matter if the company goes out of business. So first and foremost, the message is this. If you have high-yield bonds in your portfolio, whether it's in a mutual fund, individual holdings, or ETFs, look to see what percentage is in the energy sector. Because energy high yield is actually paying more than some of the other sectors. So some of these mutual fund companies and ETFs have a very high percentage allocated to that sector. If we see oil and gas decline as we go into the summer months, there are some companies that aren't necessarily in that great shape. Not trying to fan the fire a bit here, but if we start to see defaults rise in the energy sector, that's not necessarily great for high-yield debt and mutual funds and ETFs that represent them. So anticipating that, and based on what iShares BlackRock is hearing from advisors and institutional investors, they've created a similar offering, but just removed oil and gas companies from it. Again, very attractive yield as well, but it doesn't have the exposure to that area of the marketplace. So in that regard, very innovative.
This is an innovative fund that I think a lot of investors can gravitate to because of the way it's structured, and it makes a lot of sense. But are there limitations in terms of how it's played? Is it the 200-day moving average play? Is it the trend type of play? Or is it this is a different way to hold junk in your portfolio, so this is a permanent allocation?
The two biggest ETFs that are junk bond oriented are JNK and HYG. If you own any of those, or if you have high yield mutual funds or something like that, and you can see what the allocation is to sectors, go in and see the underlying holdings. I think what you'll find is because everyone's looking for liquidity in the high yield marketplace, you might see in HYXE what you might see in JNK and HYG, but without that energy allocation. If this story that we're talking about right now is getting a little bit of interest, you can easily go into your portfolio right now, remove some of that high yield offering and replace it with this, and all you're doing is removing that exposure to an area or a sector of the marketplace that might be a little bit strained right now. If you feel like this rebound in gas and oil is a little bit long in the tooth and we might see prices start to slide back, and that concerns you as far as the overall debt, it might make sense to diversify. If overall high yield within the average junk bond mutual fund or ETF is approaching 30% or more, that's a pretty big allocation. So you can do it right now because the underlying securities that you're seeing in this ETF are going to be very similar to what you're seeing in some of these big high yield ETFs. Is it a 200-day average play? I think at this point it's not, because we don't have a 200-day average. It would be merely a way to diversify away from energy in your high yield allocation.
And what that also means is that if somebody out there thinks that oil prices are going back to $70 a barrel next year, they would probably not move in this direction, right?
That's right. Absolutely. But in high yield, you're taking a pretty big bet. And it's nice that things have rebounded a bit here. But the question is now, as we're looking at oil at $50 a barrel, are we going to see 70? It's a flip of the coin.
And we don't want people flipping coins. We want people building portfolios they can live with and be comfortable with. And the comfort, that's the thing that is why junk bonds without oil exposure, getting back to my first question. It's the iShares iBox High Yield Excluding Oil and Gas Corporate Bond ETF. It's a mouthful, but it's also ticker symbol HYXE, the ETF of the week from Tom Lydon. Tom, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks, Chuck.
Well, Tom Lydon is the editor of ETF Trends, which you can learn more about at etftrends.com. You can follow him on Twitter. He is at Tom Lydon. ETF Trends is at ETF Trends. That was a great way to start our Thursday edition of Money Life. The big interview is next, and then there's much more to come. So I hope you're getting comfortable. We're going to be here for a while, and we'll be living the money life. We'll be back to it in just a moment.
Thank you. At Hightower, providing the best fiduciary advice to every advisory client is not just a job, it's a legal duty. Sophisticated asset management, lifetime financial planning and wealth management solutions. At Hightower, it all adds up to peace of mind. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
Many of you are surely wondering why I have summoned you at this hour.
It's time for the big interview.
All right, boys, prepare to be dazzled.
That's right, it's big. It's the big names, the big news, the biggest stories. It's the next big thing. What's the big deal? It's the big interview.
What's going on here? This is big news. We need coverage of this.
Money Life brings you the big thinkers, the top experts, the brightest minds. With the big interview, you can stay informed about all the financial matters that are important to you, all in one big package.
Oh, boy, I've never gotten a package this big. I've always wanted to have a huge package.
Did my taxes pay for this?
The big interview. Sit down, strap yourself in, and get ready to learn.
Your mind is beginning to work. It's entirely due to my influence, of course. You mustn't take any credit.
Well, today I think we're going to help your mind work around a subject that I think we're going to take a slightly different look at it. And the subject is what is known in the business as ESG. It's environmental, social, and governance issues that basically go into social investing. If you listen to the show, you know I don't call it socially responsible investing because I don't assume everyone else is irresponsible. But we talk about social investing, and typically we talk about it from the standpoint of, hey, if you're an investor and you don't want to own this stuff, you know, how do you get it screened out and make sure you're investing along with your values? What we typically do not talk about is, hey, is there a component of environmental, social, and governance issues that if I'm buying the right companies to invest with my values, I'm going to make better returns? There's been a recent white paper, and it's all up on the website at Calvert Investments. And joining me right now is John Stroyer. He is Chief Executive Officer at Calvert. If you want more information, calvert.com. Or go to the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. You'll find John there, and you'll find a link directly to the materials we're going to pretty much be talking about throughout this conversation. By the way, Calvert is on Twitter, at Calvert Invests, and John is on Twitter. He's at John Stroyer, which is S-T-R-E-U-R. John Stroyer, welcome to Money Life.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us. And in that intro, I think I summed up how we do it, but also how a lot of folks do it, which is they kind of think that if I invest socially, I'm not focused on returns and the fact that I will get better returns. And you guys in this research are looking and saying, hey, there's a material benefit. And it's always been there. It's always been something that social investors have said. But this is more research to say that you can do better while investing with your values, right?
Right. I think that what we're working to do is to understand how the capital markets are connecting securities prices to these behaviors that companies are increasingly engaging in. We know that companies across the industries are working to do a better job of meeting society's expectations for what a company is supposed to deliver today. In addition to great products and services, most people expect companies to help to solve some of our greatest social and environmental problems. And so the question is, how are the capital markets understanding that and connecting securities prices to those corporate initiatives?
Is there a point where one of the factors, the E, the S, or the G, creates the best chance for us to create better than average or better than market returns? Because intuitively, I think, wow, if you're doing the environmental stuff and you're doing that, I can see where that clearly has an impact on the bottom line. The social stuff, maybe a little less impact on the bottom line. And the governance issues, well, that sort of depends on what the governance issues are. That's almost case by case. But is there one area or another that tends to wind up impacting corporate financials more?
There absolutely is, but it is completely dependent on the industry that the company is participating in. So, for example, a company in the utility industry, a power generator, the environmental issues are paramount there. What is the company's fuel source? How well is the company doing at transitioning to a low-carbon economy? And have they really figured out how to produce power from renewable sources in a way that works financially long-term? So certainly in that industry, the environmental factor is paramount. If we look at the software industry, a company's ability to manage its relationships with its workforce and maintain its ability to attract and retain a particular type of employee is paramount. So in that industry, we would say the social factors, the S factors, the workplace factors are of much greater importance. So it's important to look at this on an industry by industry basis and understand that one industry will be much more heavily weighted towards the environmental issues, another the social. And you mentioned governance. We can take that in a lot of different directions, but governance is important across the board.
That being the case, where it's very dependent on what you're picking, does that ultimately mean that to get the additional alpha potential, the additional return potential that comes with ESG investing, that I want to be doing specific selection, individual picks, or do I want an index fund and hope that I capture enough of it?
I think you can take it in either direction, just like every other form of investment management. There are benefits to passive investing or index investing, and there are areas where we'd like to apply active investing. But let me take it a slightly different direction, because what's very important, whether we're looking at the social factors, the environmental factors, or the governance factors, is to understand what is material to the company's financial results. Today, most companies have a sustainability program. Most companies are investing real money in attempting to improve the way they meet environmental standards and meet evolving social norms. It is critical to understand how well each company's management is doing in terms of dealing with those risks and opportunities. Just like everything else in their business, we want to understand how well the management is doing in allocating its resources to solving these needs. In some cases, sustainability efforts aren't that productive for a company and don't produce an attractive return potential. In other cases, companies have discovered how to save large amounts of energy. They've discovered how to convert to renewable energy sources in a way that really works for their company financially. They've discovered how to interact with communities and the workforce in a way that really works for their brand or their employment cases. So we need to look at each case and understand the materiality of the action that the company's taking, not just give them credit for being a good citizen. Are they doing it in a way that also works for shareholders? And that's what's really sustainable. Good for society, good for the environment, and done in a way that works within our capitalist system and brings the return back to the shareholder.
You know, one of the things that I've always said about social investing is that I don't necessarily believe that people can be a little bit social. You know, you're either a social investor or you're not. It doesn't make sense to me on one level to say, well, these are my values and I invest with them over here when I'm dealing with large cap, but I don't invest with them internationally or what have you. But as I read this material, I actually thought you could make a pretty strong case to say, yes, you can be a little bit social. You're trying to do what good you can. You're trying to profit from it so that somebody who has an established portfolio that maybe they didn't go towards ESG types of factors at all, if they want to migrate over there, suddenly I find less of some of that issue that I had. Am I wrong in that assumption? Obviously, you run a company that does social investing, but do you believe that somebody, and especially because of the results here, can be, you know, a little bit social, that maybe you have your values every place, but it's okay to build a portfolio that is only partway to your values, but oh, by the way, it still upholds your profit motive, so that makes it okay.
I think that these issues around how well companies are meeting society's needs and expectations around social and environmental issues are becoming much more mainstream. Therefore, most investors are beginning to incorporate an analysis of environmental, social, and governance factors into their decision making. Additionally, the percentage of investors who are doing that and attempting to move our mission forward, move our capitalist society towards better solutions and longer-term sustainability, that's increasing greatly. Today, 1,500 large asset owners worldwide have signed the United Nations Principles of Responsible Investing. Total dollars under management for that group, $60 trillion. So this is a large movement of investors saying, we need to analyze companies' behaviors across the board. Knowing that, we think that most investors can be all the way or a little bit social, but everybody's beginning to work to incorporate this information into their portfolio.
Well, John, really very interesting. Like I said, I thought as we entered today's conversation that we might be opening some eyes, because some of this has opened my eyes a little bit as well to looking at things differently. Thanks so much for taking time out to discuss it with us here on Money Life.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
John Stroyer is the Chief Executive Officer at Calvert Investments. Calvert.com, at Calvert Invests on Twitter. John's on Twitter. He's at John Stroyer, S-T-R-E-U-R. And remember, if you want to go check the latest of Calvert's studies, you can do that by going to the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. Find John there, and you'll find a link directly. All right, we're halfway through the June 23rd edition of Money Life, but halfway through means there's lots more to go. So settle back and relax, and don't touch that dial. We'll be back in just a moment.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
Your retirement years are coming. Are you financially ready for your retirement?
You know, I've been thinking.
Oh, that would explain the beads of sweat.
Don't let this happen to you.
I'm afraid it's just not sufficient to refinance your home.
Where shall I go? What shall I do?
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.
Bob Powell knows where to turn and how to help you with your financial needs as you plan for or live in retirement.
Here I come to save the day.
It's all here as Retirement Weekly's Bob Powell joins Money Life every week for Senior Focus.
Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous behind the wheel, can still serve a purpose.
And today on Senior Focus, we're talking with Bob Powell about an issue that, well, it concerns your family, no matter what it is, because it's really about longevity of money and some of the differences that are out there between men and women when it comes to saving. And it's one of these things that, no matter your gender, no matter where you are, depending on who else is in your life, this is the kind of issue you need to know to be able to be comfortable and avoid the worries that other people, hopefully not you, are going to have in retirement. If you want to learn more about it, Bob's going to be writing about it. Now, Bob's columns appear in the Retire Mentors section at MarketWatch.com. And Retirement Weekly, his newsletter, is a MarketWatch product. So if you find his work, you'll find links and you'll be all set. If you want help finding his works, then follow Bob on Twitter, where he's at RJPIII. But right now, Bob's back on Money Life. Bob, welcome back.
Chuck, thanks for having me on the show.
This is one of those issues that pretty much affects everybody. Even if you're in the case that I'm in right now, where I'm single, okay, I only have to worry about myself. But if I ever get involved with somebody and you're looking at longevity issues, well, it dramatically changes. And now there's some more research that supports the fact that you better understand that difference.
Yeah, so the study that sparked this week's column is Aon Hewitt released a report that said a couple things. I'll go through the facts first. One said that 83% of U.S. women aren't saving enough to meet their needs in retirement. That compares to 74% of men. Aon Hewitt also projects that women will need 11.5 times their final needs in retirement versus 10.6 times pay for men. And then they also further said that there's a gap of 3.3 times pay between what the need and what they actually on track to have saved in order to retire at 65. And by contrast, the difference for men was two times. The shortfall, according to Aon Hewitt, means that women on average will need to work until age 69, at least 1 year longer than men, in order to meet 100% of their needs in retirement. And that got me thinking, what should women do to take matters into their own hands, given this bleak report? A couple things stand out from the experts I spoke to. One is, increase your savings rate was sort of step one. At the moment, women save about 7.5% of salary versus 8.7% for men. And their balances tend to be a lot lower, $71,000 versus $120,000. So this might sound obvious, but women need to increase the amount that they contribute to their 401k ASAP. And at a minimum, you know, save enough to get your employer's full match. At a minimum, make sure that you're increasing the amount you contribute each and every year. And that will go a long way toward improving your retirement security, but it won't be the only thing that you need to do. I think the other thing that experts I spoke to said was that you should seek professional help, and that there's been some evidence that suggests that those who do seek help, be it in the form of online advice or professional human advice or managed accounts, do better than people who try to do it alone. So if you're a woman and you haven't sought professional help, that too would go a long way toward helping you improve your financial security. And the interesting thing is, one of the women I spoke to, Cindy Hounsell from Wiser, said women are used to asking for directions when they need to, you know, whatever, travel somewhere. I mean,
right.
In the day and age before GPS came along, you know, I can't tell you how many gas stations I stopped at for directions. Not because I wanted to, but because I had to.
Because you were being told to, Bob? Is that what we're saying here?
Right.
You were being told to.
Women should feel more than comfortable asking a professional for some help. And I know it might be hard trying to figure out who to trust. But, you know, start with the things that are offered in your plan. So that can go a long way. The other thing is to plan for widows' benefits now. And we all know that husbands tend to predecease their spouses by about 5 years. And lost in the world of retirement planning is this notion that the maximum survivor's benefit is limited to what a husband would have received if he were still alive. So if a man takes their Social Security at age 62, which is roughly about upwards of a 30% cut from what it would have been if they took it at full retirement age, you know, that benefit is permanently reduced. And by contrast, if their husband had taken Social Security at age 70, that's a 32% increase. And that, too, means that the spouse's survivor's benefit would be permanently increased by that amount. So, you know, think ahead, plan ahead. Your husband will die first. You'll live longer. You'll probably be living, you know, depending a lot on Social Security. So make sure you get the maximum widow's benefit that you can.
You know, it's interesting you talk about that need for help. I mean, I think that the issue is not so much necessarily in asking for help. It's the other side of this, which is help in many cases is, we're always told, designed to help women to understand, hey, you need to take on more risk. You need to not just save more, but invest, because you're going to have that longer lifespan, and potentially put them into some places where on their own they might be uncomfortable. Is that, in your opinion, what also holds them back, or why? Because there's a reality that, hey, there's something here that's going to be uncomfortable, unlike directions, where there's a happy ending, you reach your destination.
Yeah.
In this case, maybe not.
I think there's a sense of discomfort and fear that goes into this because, you know, this is complicated stuff, right? And one of the bullet points I have is that, you know, women will tend to have a more unique investment strategy than perhaps men, given their increased longevity and their fear about living their assets. They may need this blend of immediate and deferred income annuities along with risky asset stocks, right? The one will make sure that they don't outlive the assets, and the other will make sure that they keep pace with inflation. That's not quite necessarily the strategy that people are accustomed to, right, is this blend of maybe annuities and stocks to meet their needs. But all that sort of in line with, I said, get professional help. One of the interesting trends that we're seeing now is all these financial wellness programs that are coming into effect.
Mm-hmm.
Fidelity just launched their own version of it this week, where you can get a checkup on your money, my money checkup, I think it's called. And so, you know, people should, you know, feel more comfortable, whether it's, you know, Aon Hewitt or Ernst & Young or Fidelity or countless, you know, firms that are offering wellness programs through employers.
Take
You'll
advantage.
Be able to get this information that you need.
Yep, absolutely. Take advantage, because Although the numbers say women will need more help potentially because they've got that longer lifespan, the answer is everybody needs to know that they can get there. Bob, great stuff as always. We'll chat with you next week.
Chuck, thanks for having me on the show.
Bob Powell is the editor at Retirement Weekly. He is a columnist in the Retire Mentors section at MarketWatch. Find his work at MarketWatch.com. Follow him on Twitter at RJPIII. The Market Call is next. Stay tuned.
Independent and advisor-owned, Hightower ensures that best-in-class financial product and service providers compete for your business every day, a groundbreaking model that's making waves on Wall Street. Discover what Hightower can do for you at HightowerAdvisors.com.
It's hard to know what to do next in the stock market.
Where am I? What am I doing here?
That's because one expert's rally is another's prelude to a correction.
Of course, people do go both ways.
One manager's buy is another man's sell.
Have you come to any conclusions yet?
Each day, the Money Life Market Call brings you a different expert's take on where to invest and what to avoid.
Now listen, Grapehead, I'll explain it so even you can understand it.
Just as important, you'll find out the reasons behind that thinking, and that should make your next financial decisions easier and smarter.
We do have a system, and it works.
It's the Money Life Market Call. Now.
The only reason we're here is to make catty observations and rude remarks. And there was nothing good on TV.
And we really want to learn how to invest better. And we want to learn from savvy money managers. And we've got one for you today. His name, Brian Yachman. He is the founder and president of the YCG Funds. And yes, if his last name sounds familiar, well, it's because he is part of the Yachman family, which Yachman Funds. He's got his own firm. It's YCG Investments. You can learn more about it at ycginvestments.com. You can learn more about the funds at ycgfunds.com. It has been a little while since we had Brian on the show, but I'm pleased to say, Brian Yachman, welcome back to Money Life.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
We always start each interview by talking about methodology, because at some point we're going to evolve to what you like and what you dislike. But a buy, sell, or hold recommendation is completely worthless if somebody doesn't know the methodology. So explain what it is that you're looking for and what makes something stand out to you versus what makes something unappealing to you.
Sure. Well, in short, we're looking for above average businesses at below average prices, ideally. And the reason for that, just about a month ago, I came across this study. I think it was Longboard. That showed about 45% of equities over the last couple decades produced negative returns. And then the next 35% offset that, meaning that the bottom performing 80% of stocks produces zero returns. And so their conclusion was that all performance can be explained by the top 20%. And it might make you feel like, oh, you got to find the best performing, the up-and-coming Apples, Netflix, Facebook, et cetera. But to us, it just means you need to avoid the permanent losses. And so we have a process that I think really stacks the odds in our favor to try to help avoid permanent losses and find businesses that are enduring. And so really for us, it just all comes down to what are you buying and what do you pay for it?
Okay. But then you take a look at a market like we've got right now where value, at least thus far this year, has outperformed growth. That means that the what are you paying for something component has been changing. And I recognize your bottoms up, let's go find the right things. But I'd imagine it's a little harder to find things right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think the market in general is it's getting pretty frothy. But I do think that if you're looking for values, the best values when you look across all asset classes is going to be found among equities. And that's something I like about our process is we look at forward rates of returns, and then that makes it more comparable across all assets. And you can say, if I put this capital here, what type of rate of return can I do I believe, you know, that I can expect to get from this price level? And so, yes, it is getting more strained. And I think the high quality businesses and the low quality businesses are trading more in tandem, which is making high quality look much more attractive because you're not really getting paid much of a spread to venture into lower quality fare.
So for you, does that necessitate holding more cash? Do you wind up responding to those kinds of market conditions by saying, I'll hold more cash? Or does it change what you're buying and make you say, hey, if I can't get the same kind of values, I'll lower my standards because I want to be fully invested? How does that play out?
Well, you never lower your standards, that's for sure, because we are absolute oriented. We want to make sure that, number one, we don't lose money. And then, as Warren Buffett said, rule number two is don't forget rule number one. So you don't lower your standards. Does it mean we're holding cash? No. To be clear, yes, we do have cash, but that cash is indirectly invested through our option component of our strategy, through cash-secured puts. But I consider that invested. So if you look at the entire portfolio, we're actually fully invested. And the reason for that is, even though valuations are getting more difficult, the bottom line is, if we can find things that we believe will give us double-digit returns, then we want to participate. We would become holders of cash if we just can't find anything worthwhile to hold. So to give you some history of that, back in 2000, the market was incredibly overvalued, but I was fully invested in my personal portfolio because we could find double-digit returns. In 2007, on the other hand, while the market was, again, very richly valued, we just determined there wasn't a whole lot of great opportunities, so we started to build cash. And what we did own, we felt could deliver the returns we were looking for. But you only want to take a certain size of a stake, so at some point you just have nowhere to put the cash, and yes, you might build it. But also keep in mind that in 07, cash earned a lot more. And so here, your alternative is next to nothing in cash, or you're looking for something that hopefully can give you double-digit returns. And we feel like we've still been able to identify enough businesses that, you know, don't worry about in the short run what will happen, but 10 years out from now, am I confident that we'll get healthy returns? And we believe yes, and so we're fully invested.
Okay, so give us an example of a stock or two that come through the process and are worth holding right now.
Sure. So one that comes to mind is Nike. Nike is a very dominant, high return on capital business. And finally, we feel that the valuation is more reasonable. From a high level, think of Nike, you know, people value fitness, they value living long. And so there's this trend towards increased sports participation and wearing of athletic clothing at athleisure. I guess what I'm saying, though, is it's a company that produces something positive to society. On the last show, I talked about Colgate. It's similar like that, where it produces value to society, as opposed to, say, something like Coke, where it might be argued that you're giving poison to your children. And having said that, I actually own a small position in Coke.
And so do I, so I need to disclose that as well. But I haven't ever quite looked at it that way.
Sure. And there's a whole other host of reasons why we do own Coke. But you get what I'm saying is, here's a company that produces something that is arguably doing good to society. And they still have great emerging exposure, like Coca-Cola does. And when people are participating in fitness, they want to associate with high-status individuals that are in that sport. And the fact is, Nike's created the strongest brand. I've read that they're the number one millennial brand, recognized by millennials. And they've done that by partnering with the best. So they're able to get these great endorsements because they have the most to pay these celebrity athletes. Just to put that in perspective, their marketing budget was over $3 billion in 2015, I think it was 3.2, if I recall, about 10% of sales. Compare that to Under Armour, who also has a marketing budget that's 10% of sales, but in absolute terms, it's only about $400 million. So if Under Armour, their top-line revenue is about $4 billion last year, if they had the same total marketing budget that Nike has, instead of being 10% of sales, it would be 80%. It would eat up 80% of sales. So they have the ability to really partner with the greatest celebrities and create this ongoing brand with the millennials. And in many ways, on our last call, we talked about Richemont, which I still think is attractive. And Richemont is a social status company that does luxury jewelry. And Nike is the same kind of thing, where social status is something about when we're able to command resources and say, I'm wearing the newest expensive Jordans or whatever it may be, that lends itself to pricing power. And I love that it's just a short repurchase cycle, evergreen type business. The key here, what's created the opportunity, is China. So with the concerns in China, and the growth driver for Nike is particularly in these emerging markets like China, they're already the leader there. And in China, it's a very high margin business. It's over 30% margins compared to the rest of the business. It's about 17%. So as they grow in China, it means that the margins at Nike can continue to increase as well because it's more profitable there.
Okay, let's flip it around for a second quickly. What's something that you've had to move away from? What's something that shows the sell discipline?
Well, we don't, to be honest, if we've done our job right, we're not selling very much. We're very low turnover. I will say, having said that, we did make some sales, and we eliminated our Verizon position last February during the when everything was collapsing. So what happened there is, so I should first preface that we got into Verizon because what we loved is that the spectrum is a limited, scarce resource. The old Verizon business was the wireline, and once you had put all this capital in the ground, it became you just need to get volume on your lines, get revenue out of it. And so heavy price wars led to almost 0 to 2% type margins on the business. Contrast that with the Spectrum Wireless business, where it's a scarce resource. Data consumption is compounding at high double-digit rates. I know that because I have children, and I can see it happening in my own household. But data consumption is going through the roof, and so the thought was this can lead to pricing power over time. Whoever commands the spectrum will be able to command pricing power and earn great rates of return on that spectrum. However, what had us concerned, there were two things that made us eliminate our Verizon position. First off was the fact that when the market was collapsing, Verizon actually went the other direction. And so its forward rate of return was declining because the stock price was going up, whereas everything else, the stock prices are dropping and the forward rates of return are looking more attractive elsewhere. So that alone made us want to look to reduce and trim the position to reinvest that capital in more attractive businesses that were getting shellacked.
Okay.
The other thing was that the business itself, the management, we're just concerned with what's going on over there. We're not confident that all the cash they are generating, we will get to see that it will be reinvested in a favorable way. They seem to be getting their fingers into all sorts of things, you know, AOL, and now it's looking like Yahoo, and many other businesses. They're trying to get more into media and get eyeballs.
Well,
and we're looking to them for the wireless business, not to get into the media and the media side of things.
Now we're going to find out how you feel about some stocks that my audience is particularly interested in.
Wait, hold it.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
It's Hold It or Fold It time with Brian Yackman, founder and president of the YCG Funds. If you want more information, ycgfunds.com, ycginvestments.com. You know how Hold It or Fold It works. We're late getting to it, so we'll jump right in with a request we got from Kirk in Huntsville, Alabama, for Valiant Pharmaceuticals. The troubled pharmaceutical company is ticker symbol VRX.
So with Valiant, it's been quite the controversial story, and I'm sure many understand their strategy that was of cutting unprofitable R&D, lowering tax rates, aggressive price hikes on these drugs that they were purchasing. I won't get into all the details there, but there are real products with profitable revenue streams there. The question is, under a scenario now where they can't execute the strategy that they had planned to do, did they now overpay for these businesses? In other words, it's quite possible that the value of the debt that they used to buy these businesses exceeds the enterprise value of the entire company, in which case, of course, all the value will get chewed up by the debt and the stock's headed to zero. But inherent with leverage, if things work out, the equity could perform quite nicely from here. So frankly, I just think it's very difficult to see into the future on this one. I just think it's a gamble, a speculation. It's not my cup of tea to speculate, and so I'd fold it.
Warning, warning, warning.
Yeah, a speculation, that's a fold on Valiant Pharmaceuticals, VRX. Joe in Colorado Springs wants to know about Priceline Group, PCLN.
Priceline is actually one that we've been looking at. We do not own it at the moment, but still doing more research here. What I will say is that Priceline, what's very interesting, the strength here is these boutique hotels out in Europe that regulations are preventing that from becoming rolled up in all the Marriotts and Hiltons, et cetera. With all these boutique hotels, Priceline has formed all of these relationships, and it really has created this network effect that I think will have an enduring business. In fact, Google has tried to break into that market, and they backed down. So clearly, the Priceline's network requires a lot of time and expense to build it out. I think it's going to be an enduring business. It's growing very quickly, very capital light, recurring revenue stream. I actually really like it, so I'd consider it a hold.
Okay, so as you pointed out, it's something you're looking at. You haven't yet bought it. That puts it in the hold category.
I'm just taking my time before making the move.
But looking to make the move potentially on Priceline Group, PCLN. Joe had a second request. It was for Noodles & Company, Class A, NDLS.
So Noodles & Company is one where I think you're looking at the restaurant industry in general. Has just been known for ending up in the graveyard. It's fad-like. I think it's difficult to create a big moat around these types of businesses. And IPOs are notorious for being overpriced at the get-go, and I don't think that Noodles was any exception. Now that they've been hammered, the question would be, well, do you believe that it's going to endure? And I just don't see why I could believe that 10 years from now, Noodles & Company is going to dominate relative to any other competitor that might try to be a knockoff or whatever else. So I love the food, but I don't think an investor will end up loving the returns.
Oh boy, that sounded bad.
That's a sell on Noodles & Company, NDLS. Dave in Beaver Dams, New York wants to know about U.S. Bancorp, USB.
So U.S. Bank, speaking of restaurants, it kind of reminds me of like Chipotle after the bacteria scare or any other restaurant where, you know, after you have that happen, such a traumatic experience, then everyone avoids it like the plague, even though chances are that's right at the moment when things are the best. And I don't think that the banking industry is far off from that example, where humans are focusing and remembering this impactful, memorable crisis of many years ago in the banking industry, and yet the bank's balance sheets are in the best shape that they've been. And so I think there is an opportunity here created from that recent crisis. And while we don't own U.S. Bank, we do own Wells Fargo. And if I were to look at the banking industry, those are the two banks that I would be most attracted to because of the great cultures, because of the conservative underwriting. And U.S. Bank has a very heavily fee-based business as well that is solid and enduring. So I think it's priced great. I think it looks like a great investment from here.
Okay, so it's a buy on USB, U.S. Bancorp.
Would you mind stepping aside? I've got a purchase to make.
And thrown in there was a, sort of a buy or an inherent buy on WFC, Wells Fargo. Last, for Dale in London, Ohio, JCPenney Company. That's JCP.
With JCPenney, just like the restaurants, the graveyard is littered with retailers. You might say, well, JCPenney's been around forever. So was Kmart and Sears, and we've seen what's happened there. And many, many, many businesses have ended in the graveyard. So there was one statistic I came across recently that I found very interesting. America has, I believe it was 50 square feet of retail space per capita. Contrast that in the UK, I think it was around 10 square feet per capita. Keep in mind that the UK is the country that has the most retail space per capita. So what that means is, in my opinion, I think in America, we're looking at a bubble in retail square footage, particularly as we're facing a shift to online retailing. I just think there's too many retail stores. If it was me, I'd be getting out.
Just let it go, dude. Count your losses and move on.
Yeah, that's a sell on JCPenney, JCP. And speaking of having to let it go and give up, well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time, and so we have to give up Brian Yackman. But Brian, this was great. I hope you'll come back and do this with us again in the not-too-distant future.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Brian Yackman is the president of the YCG Funds. YCGfunds.com, YCGinvestments.com. Hey, we're just about done with the June 23rd edition of Money Life, but just about means not quite. Let's wrap things up together, won't we? Shouldn't we? We'll do that right after this message.
How
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors, Incorporated.
We're back on Money Life, and if you were paying attention, you know that Brian Yachman just talked about a couple of stocks that have been on the show a few times of late. And mostly, it's pretty good news in terms of if you're looking for confirmation, right? We haven't had anybody say much about Valiant. Who's like that stock with all the problems that have been going on? But in Hold It or Fold It, he mentioned Wells Fargo. He was really talking about USB, but he said that Wells Fargo was also a buy. John Buckingham had it as a buy the last time he was on from the Prudent Speculator newsletter. Josh Peters from the Morningstar Dividend Investor, he had it as a buy. And Peter Tuz from Chase Investment Counsel also had it as a buy. We talked about Nike. Mike Mattioli from John Hancock Funds had it as a buy. Andy Swan from Like Folio had it as a hold. And Oliver Pirsch, not when he was on this week, but the last time that he was on, he talked about Nike and had it as a buy. Brian also talked about Verizon, VZ, and that was a buy for Mag Black Scott and for Christian Bertelsen. So there you go. A couple of other cases where we had things as a buy. We've got great things planned for the rest of this month. Buck Clintworth will be our technical difficulties guest tomorrow. We've got some other fun stuff coming. I can't detail all of it for you here, but next week, Dan Wiener from the Independent Advisor for Vanguard Investors. So today's your last crack at getting stuff in for Dan. He's going to get the list tomorrow. Today is your last chance. So if you particularly are hoping that Dan's going to talk about your favorite Vanguard fund, say something now. Chuck at moneylifeshow.com. By the way, Sam Lee from formerly the Morningstar ETF investor, now with Severian Asset Management, will be talking ETFs on this show on Monday. So we could use some ETF requests if you're interested in that. Also going forward next week, Brian Frank from the Frank Fund will be among our guests for the market call. By the way, when we get to July 4th, we will take the July 4th holiday off, but I don't think we'll take anything else off around it. So you can plan to be here with us. We love being here with you. All right, enough about all of this. We need to get out of here because we let Brian Yachman run long. So thanks to Brian. Thanks to our regulars, Tom Lydon and Bob Powell. And thanks, of course, to John Stroyer from Calvert. I thought that was a good interview. Let me know what you thought. Thanks to Rob Floyd, my producer. He's so important in this. Also to Bob Robertson, who works behind the scenes on the show. And thanks to you for being here. I appreciate it. Keep your eye on the Brexit. We'll know what's happening tomorrow, and we'll go from there. All right. Today's Money Life quote of the day comes from John Barrymore. Yeah, the famous actor who said, "If it isn't the sheriff, it's the finance company. I got more attachments on me than a vacuum cleaner." Well, we hope that you don't have those kind of attachments in your life. And we hope you remember that until we do this again the next time, the best thing you can do for your money is to not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. We will see you tomorrow.
The opinions expressed on Money Life are those of the host and guests only and reflect their personal thinking. They are not to be taken as representative policy or strategy of the organization that the host or guest represents. This show is a production of Money Life Radio, Inc., which retains all rights to its content. This broadcast, either in part or in its entirety, may not be retransmitted, reproduced, or rebroadcast without the express consent of Money Life Radio, Inc. This show is an informational service only. The information here is not to be considered a direct and personal recommendation for any individual to make a specific financial decision or transaction, but rather is meant as an informal resource to help investors make informed decisions. Always consult your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney before making any major financial decision. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed for either its accuracy or completeness.
It's been nice talking with you, Chuck.